Come on, Boston. Let's think big. I'm Bill Walczak, and I approve this message.
My name is Felix Royal, and together we can build a better Boston.
As mayor, I'll make education job one. Our kids are counting on us, and we can't let them down.
I'm John Barrows, and I ask for your vote on September 24th, because together we can do this for the rest of Boston.
Dan Conley, mayor. The courage to take a stand. The experience to make it count.
Marty Walsh, for Boston's future, for mayor.
Mayor Menino told me to take it to the street. So, I'm Mike Ross, and this is my plan.
I'm Rob Consalvo. I'm all in for Boston.
That was a sampling of TV ads from some of the 12 candidates running for Boston mayor. I'm Callie Crossley, and in this special, Under the Radar, we consider the historic importance of candidates of color, delve into the power of identity politics, and ponder whether some of the lower-ranked candidates are getting a second look. Joining me here in the studio to help sort it all out is Kelly Bates, Executive Director of the Elma Lewis Center for Civic Engagement, Learning, and Research at Emerson College. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Callie. Good to be back.
Also with me is Peter Ubotaccio, Chairman of the Department of Political Science and International Studies at Stonehill College and Director of the Joseph Martin Institute for Law and Society. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
So up first, I want you both to weigh in on the importance of this race in Boston, where half of the candidates are persons of color. Peter, why don't we start with you?
I think that's very significant when you look at the history of Boston elections, particularly the history of mayoral elections. This city is not known for being particularly open to persons of color in high office for women. I think that's still a dilemma. We only have one candidate who's a woman, and that points to some lingering, I think, cultural issues in the city of Boston. But nonetheless, it's a big step forward for the city.
Do you think that – I know everybody's talking about folks not really paying attention, but in the electorate, outside of we who are noticing all of these things, are other people paying attention to this as an historic moment?
Probably not as much as we might think when we're shut off from it and talking about it, because this is what people are living, and these are not unknown candidates. Many of them have citywide experience already. They've got high name recognition. They've been very active in their communities. It is, I think, a step forward for the city of Boston when someone like John Barrows, for example, is just viewed as a natural mayoral candidate, or Felix Arroyo. That it's not a big leap in anyone's imagination that these folks are running for mayor.
Right. Yeah, I think what you're seeing is a new normal, quite frankly. I think when you look at both the race here in Boston and the race in New York City, there are several candidates of color in the pool, and there's many more mayors of color around the country. And I just think the whole election of President Obama to the highest office of our country really created opportunities and encouraged many candidates of color who had before said, I'm going to sit on the sidelines, to say, no, this is a time where I can run and be accepted, and I see that you can actually win. But it is not reaching national quarters. I have found that to be the case. You don't hear a lot of stories about what's happening in Boston and New York. It's much more about, look how many there are, how many women, how many people of color, and about the issues. So I think this is really much more of the new normal, and we're going to see this in every facet of government.
So there are 12 candidates. Half, as we said, are candidates of color, but none of them have broken through. So any poll that we've seen to date, the top candidate, and I hesitate to use the word top, it's, you know, pulling 12%. That's hardly a huge endorsement. And then the rest are 11, 10, you know, some negligible, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure we're going to see more current numbers soon. But right now, that's pretty much where we're at. So after all of this intense campaigning, and particularly the last week with all of the forums and whatever, it appears, even within these tiny margins, that one or two of the candidates of color may be getting some movement. Peter, would you speak to that?
Well, that's a fascinating aspect of this race. I mean, there's no one incredibly dominant personality. We have folks who we think have gravitated toward the top, but again, there's not been a lot of polling, and the polling that we have suggests that the differences are slight. So these 2 weeks, for the folks keeping their ears to the ground, are incredibly important, because I do think that there's a real possibility to be surprised in this preliminary election in a way that we have not been in a very long time. in Boston politics. And so I think there are some candidates out there gaining momentum and giving the alleged front runners a scare at this point.
I didn't mention any names. I just want to see. I'm going to see what you were going to say before I move to Kelly. Peter, who do you think is maybe getting some attention and breaking free a little bit?
I think John Barros is the candidate who is gaining some momentum out there. And the folks that I've spoken to and seem to agree that he is someone who is really lighting a fire out there. I do think Charlotte Goloritchie, however, is still very much in this race.
Okay. Do you agree?
I want to go back to the candidates for a second. I think the reason why there hasn't been a dominant person coming up at the top in terms of the candidates of color pool of candidates is that they all come from various different constituencies. So you have Charlotte Goloritchie, who's pulling a lot of the women's vote. The voters who followed her career when she worked for the city of Boston in housing and when she was a former state rep. You have Felix Arroyo. His base is, predominantly Latino voters and people who have also been around in the city, as well as other communities of color and progressive whites. And then you have John Barros, who pulls a lot from the nonprofit social justice community. And then the others who are pulling out of neighborhoods, Roxbury, and have media and other kinds of backgrounds. That being said, I know people are definitely talking about Charlotte Goloritchie and John Barros, but absolutely Felix Arroyo as well. I think John's gained some momentum, but his baseline was he started much further back. So he's gaining more momentum, as he should, because he was so far, I think, behind the pack. But I think
is that just because most people didn't know him?
They just didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And now his name is much more prominent, and he did better in the debate than I think most people expected. But Felix has been doing this for a very, very long time. He was in the race in the beginning. He has a lot of Latino voter support, as well as black and progressive white voter support. And Charlotte Goloritchie is also certainly, a part of that. I think that trio that we should particularly watch. But I agree, it is too close to say what's going to happen in this race. But I would say those three are probably the most credible and the ones who have real operations on the ground and are getting out the vote as we speak.
A couple of stories, there have been a lot of stories, but this is one that I thought is appropriate for this conversation, and that is that whomever the, quote, front runner candidates of color turn out to be, they've got to pull, and you've just mentioned this, Kelly, and I want you to just elaborate on it a little bit more, white vote. They must, even with a very strong base that, let's say, Ana Arroyo has with Latino constituency and black probably as well, then that something else has to happen.
Absolutely. In this day and age, the new normal I was talking about, yes, more candidates of color are running, but you can't just win by having a base of support from communities of color. It has to be a broad-based coalition, a multiracial coalition of voters that are going to put you into office. Yes, the city of Boston is a majority-minority city. Some people find that term offensive, but what it means is there's just more communities of color here than before. But you still have very vibrant and diverse white communities in Boston, the Italian community, the Irish community, and in some pockets, some diversity as well amongst whites that I didn't mention. You have to be able to cross those barriers and be very effective at that. I can't tell you if I feel like there's been one campaign among the candidates of color that's been better at that than others. I frankly think they all have not done a good enough job in reaching out across racial lines. I think they could do a lot better. But I do feel that certainly, and if you look at the white candidates, I would say they haven't done as well as bringing communities of color voters on board. Maybe with the exception of Marty Walsh, actually, who has an infrastructure and a campaign staff that's very, very diverse. And if you look at his ads, it reflects the diversity of the city of Boston, I think, quite well. And Rob Consalvo as well has tried that approach. But it's not – you're not going to hear them talk about it in very racialized terms. It's sort of quiet. I don't think anyone's done the job out of any of the candidates of being the candidate that represents the diversity of Boston. I haven't heard that yet, and it would be very exciting to see that. But that hasn't emerged.
Even at the Diversity Forum, now, Peter, you went to the Diversity Forum. It was described that way because it was sponsored by the NAACP, the Urban League, and many other organizations. And the focus was on diversity in Boston as an issue. It could go any direction, but that was the focus. You were there. So did you hear white candidates trying in the way that Kelly says they need to say, hey, I'm here for you, too? Communities of color.
So I didn't I didn't go to that forum. Mm-hmm. I did pay attention to it, but did go to the Globe Lab forum earlier in the week, which was also on diversity and had three candidates there. Yes, I did. I mean, but I think the larger point is that that hasn't been a consistent theme. So it's one thing when you're in front of a particular audience talking about a specific issue, in that case, diversity, to make a claim. And of course, one of the differences in mayoral elections today in Boston, as opposed to those in the past, is no one is standing up with their hand saying, no, 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 I'm not going to talk about that. Or they talk about race in very coded language. I'm thinking of, say, the campaigns of Louise Day Hicks in years gone by. So we're in a very different moment. But I agree that there has not been a consistent conversation on these issues during the whole course of this campaign, from the moment, you know, Menino pulled out of the race and announced his retirement until today. It is going to have to be, though, a theme that they're going to have to address, because the city is only 47% white. So if we assume there is one white candidate who makes it through to the preliminary election who has not been engaging communities of color during the whole of this campaign, they're going to have to start doing it in a more consistent pattern, because as de Blasio showed in New York City, people are willing to vote with their mind as opposed to simply their skin color, for example. They want someone who they feel like they're with. And so if you're not engaging communities of color or the great diversity of the city in a consistent fashion, then voters are going to look elsewhere.
Well, and you can't win because of, you know, the not just the numbers of people in the city, but the numbers of voters who are now from communities of color is just so high, and they are the pivot. They are the game changer in elections. I think you're absolutely right, and I think that it behooves any of the white candidates who are very strong very quickly and very soon to start talking about this one Boston and what it means and what we represent. And frankly, when this whole debate was happening around candidates of color and who should drop out, boy, wouldn't it have been leadership for someone to come forward and say, why are we focusing on this? We all care about the votes of communities of color. And if I were elected to be the mayor of Boston, this is how I would approach this. And everyone's going to be a part of the city and the fabric of the city. And here are the issues that I know we all care about and some of the issues that people feel like we're not talking about. We haven't seen that kind of leadership. I don't think we will, but I do agree if they're smart and they have the right campaign operatives, they're going to at least say you need to pay attention to this voting base.
Well, since you brought it up, Kelly, let's talk about that. It was a forum sponsored by an organization called For the Community, By the Community, which was limited to the six candidates of color. Lot of blowback. I wrote a commentary about this of people saying, you know, you would never have a whites-only forum, so why are you having an only candidates of color forum? You know, legitimate comment. But I was trying to explain in my commentary that the people that were sponsoring the organization were looking for somebody to be accountable to them who knew them. So you know my community. You know what the issues are. Daggone it. Pay attention. And I want to hear what you have to say directly. That doesn't mean to say that I don't think some of the other candidates can pay attention, but I expect more from you. And that's perhaps unfair. In fact, I think it is unfair. But this is what was going down in that moment. So to your point, Kelly, but nobody picked up on that and said, yes, we hear you. Here are the issues that are. And I'm not. And in fact, it just turned into a this is a racist, this is a non-racist thing. And nobody dealt with what the issues were. I'd love both of you to respond to that. Yeah.
Well, I think there's good reason why there wouldn't be a white-only forum. And it's really forums that allow opportunities for communities that have been excluded from political power over a very long period of time. And the blowback to that forum, I think, points to the continued divisiveness and the difficulty we have in talking about issues of race and issues and structural issues that impact certain communities more than others. And it's unfortunate. And I think that was another opportunity when one of the white candidates could have really spoken up and taken a leadership position and demonstrated that they understand some of the issues there. They didn't do it because I think in part it's a really difficult conversation. Unless you've been having it over a period of time, people see through candidates and campaigns who suddenly parachute in. And I think that's why. So despite what I said earlier about this being a new moment for Boston, a really good moment for the city, and I think pointing to the future, yeah, it's still a very difficult issue and difficult conversation to have.
And what do you think here's where people didn't also weigh in either, except for perhaps Mike Ross, which added to the drama around this, I think. Before all the forum, or at the same time the forum was being planned, we had the little kerfuffle about Linda Dorsina-Forey, who's the new rep for South Boston and would ostensibly be the host of the South Boston Breakfast, as the rep has always been. But because she's Black and Haitian, there was some blowback that maybe she shouldn't be it because she's not really from South Boston. She's not really one of us. She's married to an Irish guy with Irish kids. So it became an issue that some addressed. And Mike Ross said, when I think this is horrible, we shouldn't be talking about it. This is, of course, she can be the host. But when asked point blank, well, as mayor, would you not attend? He said, that's a bridge I'd have to cross when I got there. So again, following up on what Peter said, Kelly, this is, you know, this to me shows a lot of the cracks that are still there in and around this kind of conversation, and nobody really wants to have an honest one.
I totally agree, you know, and I think in this case, you know, Bill Linehan also missed an opportunity to reach out and say, why don't we do this together? Or, you know, let's lift up this whole, you know, breakfast and try to position this in a way to bring Boston together and not separate. And
he did eventually try to join with Suzanne Lee. He's a district, he's a city councilor, by the way, so.
Yes, he did very, very late. And I think, you know, it's an interesting issue because as an Irish black woman who lives in Boston, you know, I understand and appreciate the importance of Irish leadership, especially around our very important traditions like St. Patrick's Day. And it is powerful to see someone who's Irish to be able to speak and who's representing, you know, some particular political office. However, it's always been the case that the person who represents that district, you know, hosts that breakfast. And it's sort of nice. It speaks to a new era where you can have a Haitian woman who's married to a white man who's Irish, you know, to say, I'm doing this. And whoever is in this position should be representing this. But I can appreciate some of the concerns. You know, I know, for example, if I were to flip it and think about, you know, some of the African-American public officials I know who want to host things that are very Afrocentric and political in nature, they might feel a little concerned if someone who is of white heritage were to be the visible leadership voice on something. I think it's fair to say that there's a little bit more, you know, thoughtfulness that we have to think about. On the other hand, again, it goes back to the point that I don't think we're really seizing these opportunities of the city and its diversity and what's possible and what the future is. All those ads that we heard are all, you know, all in for Boston, future Boston, you know, let's make a future Boston. You know, I'd love to see something that, you know, was an ad that really brought in all of us and then a specific set of priorities of which people acknowledge how incredibly diverse the city is and what that means and how we're going to move forward together.
If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, and we're discussing the Boston mayor's race. I'm Callie Crossley, and here with me is Kelly Bates of Emerson Center for Civic Engagement, Learning, and Research, and Stonehill College's Peter Ubertasio. And we are talking in great depth about the candidates of color, the impact of their candidacy, the new Boston, and what it means to have a big mix-up of all the candidates, really, because it's going to be brand new whoever gets in after years of Mayor Menino. But I want to pick up on a couple threads that you both referenced the New York mayor's race, in which William de Blasio was the eventual winner on the Democratic side. He has a mixed-race family, and he spoke out about a very divisive issue in New York, which is stop and frisk. He came out, and in fact, his son, who is black, and white, but who said, listen, this is not a policy that I would endorse. And in doing so, of course, a lot of people ran from him, Peter, but a lot of people said, right, someone who's standing up for this and in a firm way on an issue that's pretty volatile. Kelly just mentioned, you know, people are not stepping out on any of the volatile issues. Now, I'm going to bring it back to here in Boston. There's been a lot of discussion around Ed Davis and the crime and what's not happening in communities of color that is happening in other communities. And in fact, John Barrows distinguished himself at a forum last week in which he said, I attended the funeral of Amy Lord, the young white woman who was killed brutally in South Boston, because I was very upset about it and wanted to grieve with that community. But when I got there, he said, all of the people who represent power and government were there, and that's not a scene I'd ever seen in my community. And I asked the question, why not? Peter, respond to that. And is this a lost opportunity here in Boston for some Bill de Blasio person to step forward?
Well, it may be. I mean, I think the jury is still out, and a lot is going to depend on what happens over the next, you know, week and a half, and then after the preliminary election going into the general election. There's still an opportunity. But that was a very searing and powerful moment. And Barros knows, as we all do, that crime in his community rarely makes the front page of the major daily newspapers in this region. It's a fact of life. And one of the difficulties I think that the district attorney had, for example, when he was talking about crime and he was talking about data in an almost clinical way. People who have to live in communities where crime is a daily fact of life don't see it in the very clinical way that the DA might when he's just looking at data. And so that is an issue that has not been, I think, fully explored. And Barros really put his finger on something that could be very difficult for the city to have this conversation, because it's not simply an issue of crime. It's how do we deploy our resources? It's about institutional power structure. Why are all of the leaders of the region and the state going to the funeral of one person over another? We don't want to suggest that they perhaps value that life more because the person was not a person of color. And I'm not sure any of them would see it that way, but it is something that needs to be explored. And de Blasio showed in New York City that when you're willing to take a firm stand, because interestingly, Bill Thompson was viewed as sort of moderate on the issue.
Black,
of stop
another,
and frisk.
Another candidate who was black in the race.
That's
yes.
right. Yeah. And progressive voters who were really frustrated by the issue, very much concerned about that policy, flocked to de Blasio.
Kelly, now you mentioned that in the same way that the stop and frisk and became a rallying cry for de Blasio, that you're thinking that in Boston, the Boston Teachers Union and the education issue is one that could make or break somebody. Now, John Connolly, who is not a candidate of color and who was out there before Menino said he was not going to run, that's his issue. That's what he's claimed as his issue. Is that why he's up at the top?
I think John Connolly definitely put a stake in the ground for his candidacy when he focused on education and literally proclaims in his messaging and in his materials that I want to be your education mayor. And, you know, he's always been focused on education since he's been on the council. I think what voters have to pay attention to, there are very, very, very serious differences around each of these candidates' perspectives on education. They have very different philosophies about whether or not we should invest in public schools, how much we should expand charter schools, where we should put funding, what kinds of days we should have. Should we have extended days at the schools versus shorter days? Teacher pay, teacher quality, neighborhood schools versus the fact that we don't have quality schools in every neighborhood. I think this is so critical. And I'm amazed in this day and age that it's not even as much of a critical, I feel like, in the debates and beyond. I don't think the issue has been raised nearly enough. And at the Boston Teachers Union Forum this week, what we expected is that there would be a lot of contention. And there was, because very few of the candidates have the same perspective. You know, Connolly is very much about, let's take on the unions, let's totally change things, and let's lift the cap on charter schools and just, you know, totally reinvent the system. Well, there's some interesting notions to that, but it also can be misleading. There's a lot of controversy over whether charter schools are the way
and
to go.
Isn't the Boston Teachers Union throwing away its power to some degree by not endorsing, because as they said they're not going to do before the preliminary election?
I think they are going to really have difficulties. I feel like they would have had so much more power if they would have endorsed early. The problem that the Boston Teachers Union has is the two most pro-union candidates in the race, Felix Arroyo and Marty Walsh, they love both, really, truly. Mm. Although if you know, look closely on the ground, you know, you can see the union splitting apart who's working on whose campaign. They don't want to take a position on either. They're going to wait and see if one of them gets into the final two, and then you're going to see all those resources. Many of the unions are going to be deploying resources in that direction. The other candidates have very, very different views than Connolly on education. I mean, even, you know, you would think it's just the candidates of color, for example, that might be concerned about quality schools, for example, in Roxbury or in Dorchester, or might be concerned about the proliferation of charter schools. Rob Consalvo actually does not support lifting the charter cap and the number of charter schools that we have. So, you know, this is an issue to dig a lot deeper into.
We don't have that much more time to delve into these very rich issues, but I did want to point out something that you raised, Peter, and that is there's such richness in the field. And Chris Ferrone, as you pointed out, has been writing about this, that it's kind of a shame to know that, you know, one person is going to end up in the slot and the rest of these people just, and their good ideas for the city just go away. You know, how do we respond to that as a city that definitely needs to make a change based on many of the things that you two have mentioned today in so many directions?
It's going to be a real challenge for the next mayor because one of the hallmarks of the Menino years has been the reality that there is no good natural farm team. He didn't really cultivate leadership. I think the current administration found it threatening. And the next mayor, I'm hoping, will not have as tight a grip because what we're seeing here are tremendously talented people who have an extraordinary role to play in the coming years. And it would be my hope that the new mayor would bring them in and find an appropriate place for them. Boston mayors serve for as long as they like. So there's every reason to think that the next mayor is going to be there for at least a couple terms, if not more. It would be a shame, to, having looked at this field and looking at the richness and the deep talent, if they are kept at arm's length. Menino did that after his last few cycles, and I think the new mayor has a really good opportunity here to bring some of these folks into the tent.
You know, it's interesting. I used to be of the viewpoint that the next mayor will serve forever. I'm not so sure, actually, because we have the good news, voters, is there's really good choice here. There's 12 very, very interesting candidates who come from very different places and different perspectives, who I think many of whom are very good leaders. I think they're going to go back out there and want to vie for that position again. And I think it's going to be crucial, whoever gets in to be mayor, that they have an incredibly successful term or two. Because if they have any big missteps or any big problems, I think those folks are going to be right in the wings, ready to go. And I also think generationally, the way people view politics is a lot like they view social media. You know, it's quick, it's fast, and there's turnover. So I am not so convinced that it could be someone for a long, long time. They'd have to really, really, really do a phenomenal job and not make any major, major mistakes.
Okay, so will either of you go on the record with any predictions of who'll end up in the two slots in the preliminary race? No, you're shaking your head.
It's just too close.
Very, very difficult. Yeah. Far too close.
Not even wild guesses? No?
I would just say that I would love to see a surprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the sense that, you know, we have this notion that Walsh and Connolly and Connolly are the leaders. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a lot of ferment out there, and it's entirely possible that we end up with two folks who are not one of those three.
Is it turnout, Kelly?
It's all about turnout. At this point, it's about getting your people to the polls and who can do that the best. And really, there's a lot of candidates who have a lot of people on the ground, so we don't know where this is going to go, which is why every vote's going to count. It's going to be very close.
I didn't get a chance to ask you, but I want to throw it out here for people to ponder, and that is whether the Asian American community coming into its own on the city council side, which I believe is going to have a great impact on this race as well. We've got Michelle Wu, who's likely to be a city councilor, and Suzanne Lee, who lost by 97 votes to Bill Linehan, has a really good shot at being on the city council again. And I would keep an eye on where does this community go and place its support. I think that's a constituency that somebody needs to reach out to in a serious way. So that's my my political analysis. But I've been the great beneficiary of the political analysis from the two of you, and I so appreciate it. Thank you, Kelly Bates and Peter Ubertasio, for joining me for this special Under the Radar Boston Mayor's Race program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kelly Bates is the executive director of the Elma Lewis Center for Civic Engagement, Learning, and Research at Emerson College. And Peter Ubertasio is the chair of the Department of Political Science and International Studies at Stonehill College and the director of the Joseph Martin Institute for Law and Society. Join us next Sunday when we return with the stories that went under the radar. In the meantime, you can find WGBH's interviews with the Boston mayoral candidates on our website, wgbhnews.org. You can also listen to past shows and find links to stories we discussed today at wgbhnews.org/UTR. I'm Callie Crossley. Our engineer is Alan Mattis, and our producer is Abby Ruzica. Under the Radar is a production of WGBH.